Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The headlines on two big new studies on early childcare and its effect on children were definitely head-turning. More academic prowess, less social development in daycare kids. That is, in the millions of American children who spend hours every week in childcare in the years before school. For parents, this hits the raw nerve of hopes and fears, but there may be implications for all society, too. This hour on Point, we'll get the details, the latest on the impact of sending our kids to childcare. You can join the conversation. If childcare kids have better scores but worse social skills, is that a good trade-off? Has childcare, daycare, preschool worked for you and your children? Have you seen these research results borne out in the children you know or not? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We begin with an overview of the new studies just out and how they've been received. Tamar Lewin covers education for the New York Times. She joins me now from New York. Tamar, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you.
Can you give us the highlights? We've got three studies here. The third one looks at child safety. We'll put that aside for the moment. But two that look at the impact of child care on kids. What do we learn?
Well, that's right. And what's interesting about them is they're two very big, good, credible studies that went in different directions. So there's one that's been a very long-running thing, pretty much since birth. They found 10,000 kids in 10 cities and followed them into whatever kind of child care arrangement they went.
Yeah.
And this is the one that made everybody crazy 4 years ago. People reacted wildly when they said that at 4.5, these kids were more demanding, more aggressive, and more bullying.
That is the child care kids.
That's right.
Now, is this the California study or the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development?
That's the National Institute of Child Health study.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They've now gone with these same kids another few years, and by third grade, interestingly, they had found that the aggression part had just dissipated. They weren't more aggressive than other kids. But they still did have both a lower level of kind of cooperative sharing skills and worse work habits and self-regulation than the other kids. This study is going to keep going. We will see eventually whether that goes away too.
We're going to talk with one of the authors of that study. Then you've got the California study and its implications.
Right. Wait, I should also say
the
good news from that study is that these kids really did have stronger cognitive skills. And that is a piece of good news that is in both this study and the other study, which is a California study that looked at a nationally representative sample of 14,000 kindergarten kids and then worked backwards to sort out which ones had been
who did
in
what?
How much child care.
Mm-hmm.
And that one also found very similar things. They found the same worse social skills and the same cognitive increases in the kids who'd been in a lot of daycare. They did find kind of a dose effect, that if you were in more than 6 hours a day of child care, these effects were stronger, and the cognitive benefits were less. It doesn't keep going up the longer you're in child care. You don't keep getting better and better at your pre-reading and math.
Now, there are demographic and implications here, too, and income implications. As I read the reporting, Tamar, everybody had gains in math and language capacity, I guess, or readiness skills, cognitive skills, as you say. But the highest gains were for kids from poorer families.
Right, and they think that is because those kids came from less language-enriched and sort of cultural capital-enriched homes. But interestingly, this study, for the first time, found that it was the richest kids who had the strongest effect, negative effect on their behavioral skills. And that's something I don't think anybody had looked at or seen before.
What's the context for this, Tamar? We read that lots of states are looking at extending child care. California has a big debate going on this, but Massachusetts, Illinois, Georgia, Oklahoma, New Jersey, New York.
Yeah, there's this idea of universal pre-K is a big thing. And one thought about it is maybe you really don't want to have kids in more than 6 hours a day of childcare. Another, you know, constant piece of this is that so much of it depends. Nothing is a single factor in raising kids. There's the quality of the childcare. There's the quality of the parenting. So it's very hard to say, well, childcare does this.
But though, when we look at it on this very large scale, we see some of the authors of these reports saying we should think twice about channeling more and more American children into more and more childcare.
Yeah, but the key is more and more childcare. Does that mean that every kid should have access to some childcare? We're a long way from that now.
At this moment, we've got something like 1.4 million 3- and 4-year-olds in preschool programs, 5.2 million children attending preschool overall. You're saying that's way short of what the country might be able to use?
Well, we're not just talking about 4-year-olds. We're talking about 3-year-olds and 2-year-olds and 1-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
And another implication of this is that the California study found that the negative effects were strongest for the kids who went into childcare the earliest. So another thing you might think about this is, yes, preschool, when we think of preschool as 3- and 4-year-olds, but maybe not a big move toward putting everyone into subsidized funding when they're 6 months old. On the other hand, we have most American women working, and as a practical matter, they need to do something with their children.
And most of them who are working more than 6 hours a day.
Right.
So there we go. Tamar Lewin, thanks very much for reporting, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Tamar Lewin, reporter for the New York Times. She spoke with me from New York. For a closer look at the new studies, we go now direct to some of their authors. Joining me from Berkeley, California, is Bruce Fuller, professor of education and public policy at the Graduate School of Education at the University of California at Berkeley. He is a co-author of the new study, How Much is Too Much? The Influence of Preschool Centers on Children's Development Nationwide. Bruce Fuller, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And with us from Seattle, Washington, Catherine Booth LaForce, professor of child and family nursing and adjunct professor of psychology at the University of Washington. She is also a research affiliate at the Center on Infant Mental Health and Development. Her primary focus is the social-emotional development of children. She is a co-author of the new study, Early Childcare and Children's Development in the Primary Grades. Catherine Booth LaForce, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Catherine, first to you, if I may. We see what the headlines this made in the New York Times and elsewhere. You see the takeaway that the press has grabbed onto here. Is it the right thing? What is the message? What would you describe the message out of these two big studies as being?
In terms of the message of our study, I think that the worst thing that people can do is be completely alarmed about what we found. The effects that we found for both the number of hours in childcare and the quality of care were both very small. So in other words, both the good news and the bad news was small news. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't be concerned about it, but it does mean that we should also look at what's happening with parents. And we found that the effects of parenting on children's development were a lot bigger than the effects of childcare. So in other words, regardless of the quality of childcare or the number of hours in care, the things parents are doing at home are more important. That said, we are concerned that there are these effects of childcare, and some of them are negative, and it affects so many children. So what happens when you get a large number of children in one classroom who have had a lot of hours in childcare? Are they all slightly more aggressive? And do they all have poorer work habits, poorer social skills, et cetera? And does that pose a problem for teachers in terms of managing these children and spending less time on instructional materials?
In other words, are we sending new generations into elementary school with less ready socially to learn with all its implications?
Exactly.
Bruce Fuller, what about this issue of whether or not this is a significant margin? I'm looking at reporting on your study, the California study, UC Berkeley and Stanford. What I think I'm seeing here, that wealthier children trailed their peers by 15 percentage points in your measure of social development coming out of childcare. Have I got that right? And that does not seem to me like a minor margin.
That's right, Tom, although our findings are pretty consistent with the National Institutes of Child Health and Human Development report that Catherine just mentioned.
Right.
That is, we're looking at these 14,000 kids in kindergarten, and the so-called cognitive gains in terms of language development and early reading skills are about 5 percentile points. So parents are used to seeing these reports back from their school-age kids, and 5 percentile points is not huge, but it is significant.
And that's 5 points overall demographic, overall income backgrounds, or for middle-class
kids.
Okay.
And we haven't really known in the past the extent to which preschool centers affect middle-class kids.
Mm-hmm. I'm saying for poorer kids, as much as 8 or 9% difference, a significant difference in math and learning skills.
Exactly. It's almost double for kids from low-income backgrounds, which has implications for how we invest in public preschool. But with regard to social development, I think Tom, you and Tamar Lewin have accurately summarized our findings. We did find that at kindergarten, kids' normal rates of social development were slowed significantly, and it was slowed to the extent of 15 percentile points among kids from affluent families. These are families, the upper quarter of the income range in America, which are families earning about $98,000 a year on average.
Okay.
So to be precise here, kids from that demographic who spent more than 6 hours a day in preschool centers, mm-hmm. their social development was about 15 percentile points below similarly affluent kids, so to speak.
And social development including things like what?
Well, the ability to share, the ability to move from classroom task to classroom task fairly independently, mm-hmm. The ability for a 5-year-old to work with other 5-year-olds in a classroom setting as gauged by the kindergarten teacher. So this slowdown was quite significant for youngsters from these affluent families. Mm-hmm. And as Tamar Lewin mentioned, we hadn't really known about that before.
Bruce Fuller, Catherine Booth-LaForce, we're going to come back and look at this in more detail. There's something counterintuitive here. I think a lot of parents might have thought that sending the kids to childcare would help in their social development. We want to understand exactly what's being said and not here. Listeners, you can join us. 1-800-423-8255. What's your experience? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about outside-the-home child care and new research on its effects on children. I'm joined from Seattle, Washington, by Catherine Booth-LaForce at the University of Washington, and from Berkeley, California, by Bruce Fuller at UC Berkeley, each of them a co-author of one of two big new studies that are out on child care, and you've heard something about the results they're finding. You can join this conversation as well. If child care kids have better scores but worse social skills, is it worth it? And has child care, daycare, preschool worked for you and your children? Have you seen these research results borne out in children you know? More aggressive child care kids, better prepared child care kids. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And of course, Bruce, Catherine, there's this third study lurking in the wings here, which looked at safety, strictly at safety, and said that kids are safer generally in a child care setting than with private nannies or in family care, 16 times more likely to die in those private settings than in child care centers. Salon.com looks at this and says, working parents would seem, no matter what they do, to be more or less screwed here. Put your children in daycare where they might develop diminished levels of cooperation, sharing, and motivated engagement, along with greater aggression, or pony up for a nanny or family daycare arrangement and risk shaken baby deaths or fatal accidents. Catherine, it makes it sound really dire when you put it in those terms.
Well, it does, and I think that it's very alarming for parents. And I think that an important fact here is that many, many families do not have a choice about this. Many families have to put their children in lots of hours of childcare because if you look at the shrinking middle class, there are many, many people who have to work. Mm-hmm. And in two-parent families, and not to mention single-parent families. So I think to say, well, oh, we should tell people to limit their children's childcare exposure, I think people don't have that choice. And so I think that you have to look at how big are these effects. And it's a call for parents to be more careful, to be more watchful, to make good decisions about their child care situations. And I think it's a call for parents to really focus on what they are doing with their children when they are with them. As well as being more vigilant about what's happening in childcare. Mm-hmm. But for us to say, you know, parents should be alarmed and pull their children out of childcare or reduce their hours, that's really not an option for many people.
And Bruce, what about the counterintuitive factor here? I was saying before, I do think a lot of parents, I mean, even some families who don't work, put their kids in some childcare because they think it will get them socialization. They'll develop social skills there when they're 2 and 3 and 4 and 5. Is this saying that that's dead wrong, that they somehow become less socially adept, their social development is stunted by some margin?
Well, I think there are a couple problems here, Tom. One is just the quality of a lot of preschool centers, and I would really echo what Catherine just said, which is I think these findings are a call for parents to become smarter shoppers, more discerning shoppers, and really make sure that the teachers can hang in there past 2 or 3 in the afternoon, that if there's a new shift of teachers or aides, that those folks are really caring and warm and responsive individuals. So part of this is to encourage parents to really look more carefully at different kinds of preschool centers and childcare arrangements before they make a decision.
And are you concerned, like Catherine, that we may be sending a kind of a wave of kids toward our elementary schools who, because of their childcare background, are going to require more behavior management time at the expense of instruction?
Well, I think the pendulum has shifted in the preschool world, in the early education world, towards cognitive skills, so to speak, towards growing bigger brains. In a sense, we're still living with the wake of the early brain research in the 1990s, and we've seen a lot of pressure in the advocacy community to align preschool classrooms to curriculum standards, to standardized tests in the first and second grade. And in a way, these findings, I think, are a red flag to say, as we're growing bigger brains, let's also attend to these kids' hearts and make sure that the programs and the approaches and the philosophies in preschools really are balanced, both in terms of cognitive growth and encouraging social development as well.
And as Catherine says, doing that in the home is a requirement that never really goes away. Bruce Fuller, Catherine Booth LaForce, if you stand by for a moment, I want to reach out to a voice from Chicago joining us. Kate Johnson is with us. She's a first-grade teacher at the Visitation Catholic School on the south side of Chicago. The school's almost 100% African-American, primarily serves low-income students. She's 26. She's been teaching for 5 years. Kate Johnson, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Kate, in your setting, do you have a sense of who's had childcare, who's had preschool, and who hasn't? Does it show up in the performance, academic or behavior-wise, of your students?
Yes, I can tell. I think that I can definitely see a difference academically in the students who have been to a preschool before versus the students who haven't, although I don't see as big a difference behaviorally in students who have been to preschool and students who haven't.
Now, you've got a fairly low-income student body there. The California study says that for poor kids, the academic gains, outweigh any social impairment they might suffer. Is that how it looks to you?
Yes, I would definitely agree with that. There's so much to be gained from going to a preschool where you can interact with literacy and math and all of those important early academic skills, especially if you're coming from a situation where you might not get that at home.
And describe how that shows up in a first grade classroom on the south side of Chicago with individual students. How do you see it?
Well, students who have been to preschool usually have better skills in handwriting, formal skills, and how to form their letters and numbers, things like that, and a lot of important pre-reading skills, tracking print from left to right, knowing how to hold a book, knowing that a story is supposed to make sense when you read a book, all of those pre-reading skills students who have been to a preschool before usually come in with. Students who haven't been to a preschool might not have the luxury of getting those skills at home already.
So as a public policy matter for poor kids, it sounds like you'd give a big thumbs up to more preschool, more child care.
I would, definitely.
And do you see that coming in Illinois?
I'm not sure. I know the governor is working towards that, but I'm not sure that people in Chicago have enough options yet as to what they can do for preschool for their kids.
Yeah, some big plans out there for Illinois, as I understand, to offer all four-year-olds voluntary preschool. That sounds like it might be a godsend in your neighborhood. Kate Johnson, thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
First-grade teacher Kate Johnson. She teaches on the south side of Chicago. We have a lot of callers who want to join us. I want to begin to turn to them. Jennifer is calling from Alexandria, Virginia. Hi, Jennifer. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. What do you think? What do you see?
Well, I see in my own daughter, she's 5 years old, just turned five, and I actually left full-time daycare and decided to work very, very part-time just so I could stay home with her.
Was she in daycare, childcare earlier?
She was having aggression issues. She was in daycare all the way until the summer.
From what age did she begin, Jennifer?
From 6 months.
And roughly how many hours a week during those years?
40.
And what kind of aggression issues? What kind of behavior issues?
Bullying, biting, kicking. And, you know, we're middle class. My husband makes about 180, mm-hmm. and there's no reason why I should be working other than the fact that my mother worked. So, you know, I don't know anything about staying home.
So are you feeling regret now in regards to your daughter's early childcare there?
Yes, total regret because, you know, here we're doing fine, and I think that in our pursuit for, you know, material things, our children are suffering.
And are you prepared to make the link between her years in childcare and this behavior? I mean, these are very huge studies. Are you sure that's where your daughter got it?
Yes, I am, because she's in school. She was in school with other kids that were not getting their needs met at home. And I think, I think about it. She was spending most of her waking hours with childcare workers that are getting paid, you know, $7 or $8 an hour to watch six kids.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not getting that. They're learning their numbers and they're learning their letters and all that. But, you know, they're getting a lot of just babysitting, too.
Jennifer, stick with us. Catherine Booth LaForce, you can hear how the results of studies like yours and the California study hit people very directly. They can induce all kinds of guilt and everything else and confusion about what to do. You hear what Jennifer has to say. What do you say in response to her, Catherine?
Well, there's a lot of things. I think that, first of all, I'd like to echo what Bruce said, that it's not just the cognitive development that we're interested in. We're really interested in children's social and emotional development, and having a warm, loving caregiver, substitute caregiver for your child is really crucial. And I think also in a group of children, having a caregiver who knows how to manage children and how to help teach them social skills and not to be aggressive with one another and so on, it's really crucial. And I think that it's important for parents to monitor childcare situations and to find the best childcare situation they can.
But you know how many panic buttons this is likely hitting, because you know how hard it is to find the ideal childcare, but people by and large have to work. Jennifer thinks she's ended up with a real situation that's brought her back home. Is that degree of drastic step what people ought to be considering? I mean, what does that mean about women in the workforce, about men and second incomes for that matter? I mean, how are we supposed to deal with this message?
I think that she's very lucky that she feels that she doesn't have to work. But as I was saying before, I think that in many, many families, this is not an option. And so I think that parents really need to look very carefully at the childcare situation. And also, as I said before, I think that parents need to provide very high quality care themselves at home.
If they can, but of course, many are going to be working. Jennifer, thanks very much for your call. Phil is calling from Beverly, Massachusetts. Hi, Phil. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
We're good.
I have the opposite situation. My daughter's been in daycare since she's been about 3 months old. She's five now.
Yeah.
And she seemed to be, you know, more sort of rule following and, you know, being with the program at the daycare and more willful or saving her more resistant behavior to when she came home when things weren't as, you know, tight.
Right. And what do you take away from that? Are you glad for her childcare experience or not?
Well, in a lot of ways, I'm glad. I think she's, but we didn't have a choice. You know, I think is going back to what people said. We both, my wife and I, work, so it's something we had to do, and it does raise a lot of anxiety. The fact that my daughter's five now, and I've been through the experience and haven't seen any terrible, you know, effects, I feel much more relaxed. But a study like this came out when she was just born, and it did make me very nervous.
But she's come through all right. But you know just how what a high wire act this can feel like to young parents. I certainly know that as well. Phil, thanks for your call. Bruce Fuller, what do you say to individual parents and individual families? You're dealing in huge numbers here, 14,000 in your study. For individual families, how should they receive this news? This could produce a lot of anxiety.
Well, I do think we're trying to think about balance here, and both Jennifer and Phil, I think, are struggling with how to balance working and raising kids. And I think Catherine's point is worth emphasizing, that in a way these studies are saying we need to find a better mix of higher quality preschool centers mixed with higher quality home environments. In part, I think employers need to get into this dialogue, because much of the debate now is how do we move to full-day childcare, full-day preschool, assuming the nature of work is sacred and won't be changed in this country. And I think we've got to get employers involved in this discussion, because some major employers have tried to create more flexible workplaces. So folks like Phil and his wife can better balance child-rearing with their work demands.
So you're not backing off at all the sort of profound implications. You're saying this is serious enough that we ought to be reshaping working hours in order to respond to the situation you're finding in childcare children.
Well, up front, you mentioned the context, Tom, and I think it's very important, because governors and legislatures around the country are investing billions of additional dollars to move towards full-day preschool centers. And for some families, that is a reasonable remedy, especially for very low-income families where we're showing that the effects of preschool are quite positive. Mm. But for other kids, especially middle-class and upper-middle-class kids, we may need to think about a better balance between work and child-rearing, and not assume that the state should simply take over this function of early child care.
Mm. Fascinating. Gray is calling from Lexington, Massachusetts. Hi, Gray. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'm a little bit worried about the discussion here. We're treating these studies as proving a causal relationship between child care and these effects on children. And let me just throw out, I mean, all they can prove is a correlation. This isn't some sort of double-blind study where they took kids mm-hmm. in and out of child care and looked at the results. All they can prove is correlation. And let me throw out some other possible causes.
Yes, please.
One is, I mean, for instance, in families where there's financial pressure, whereas you know, we've already had one caller who said they had to put their child in child care.
Right.
Maybe the child's reactions and aggressiveness is more response to the parents', you know, pressure. The pressure is on the parents.
You're saying it's a more upper income family, therefore putting pressure, or why more pressure?
Either upper income or probably more middle income people that feel like they're forced to go into child care. And that's just a different, you know, lower income have a lot of different pressures, and so child care may be a benefit, but I'm just really worried about
the causal relationship assertion.
Yeah.
Gray, stick with us for a second. Catherine Booth-LaForce, what about that? Gray's challenging the notion that you can have a cause and effect relationship described here.
I agree 100% with that. It is not a cause and effect relationship. All we can show is a relation between one thing and another thing. We can't say that we've caused it. It's true, we didn't do an experiment. And so I really agree with that. One thing that I should say about our study, though, is that we use statistical control. So that means that we took account of the fact that families of different incomes put their children into different kinds of childcare settings for different number of hours.
Mm-hmm.
So we took income, ethnicity, child gender, the mother's education, the mother's depression, the sensitivity of the mother's interaction with the child. We took a
right.
lot of things into account statistically before we looked mm-hmm. at the effects of child care.
Bruce,
so that's how we try and get around that.
Right. And Bruce, what do you say? If it's a correlative relationship, correlation rather than a causal relationship, does that make the findings less consequential?
I don't think so. I mean, our procedures were similar to what Catherine's group followed, and they're fairly standard. Although on Gray's point, I would say that there's been other work showing that when parents work many hours per day and their youngsters are young, in terms of late infancy and early toddlerhood, you also see some of these same negative effects on social development. So we may Tamar up front said we have a lot of factors operating simultaneously, but it
right.
may be that time away from the child is associated with more time in preschool, which is somewhat obvious. But the two factors together are leading to a set of less warm, less consistent, less invigorating relationships for young kids.
And Gray, very quickly, we've got the break coming up. If it's a correlation, not a causal relationship, do you think that makes these overall findings less significant, Gray?
Well, I just think I'm very aware when parents, you know, see these studies and think that if they put, and so in their minds, if I mm-hmm. put my child into child care, I'm going to cede these things. That it doesn't work that way. I mean, there are many more factors at work, and I think that as both your guests, I think, very eloquently said,
yes,
that you know, it's the pressures of the situation, and I think I think parents can provide a real warm and loving, you know, situation when the kids get home with child care that can overcome any instances or any sort of issues of child care.
Well, we'll certainly say amen to that. Great. We're coming up to a break here. Thanks for calling. We're talking about outside the home child care and its effects. We're at 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, BICON.com, and Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services in Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about outside-the-home child care and new research on its effects on children. This is sensitive stuff. This is bedrock to the economy. This is short hairs of the family life. You can join the conversation, What Have We Learned from a Generation of Widespread Preschool Child Care in America? Do we need more child care in this country? And if so, for whom? Do you want a kid with sharp elbows? It's a tough world out there. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been joined from Seattle by Catherine Booth LaForce, University of Washington co-author of the new study, Early Child Care and Children's Development in the Primary Grades, and from Berkeley, California, by Bruce Fuller, Professor of Education and Public Policy at UC Berkeley, co-author of the new study, How Much is Too Much? The Influence of Preschool Centers on Children's Development Nationwide. Susan's calling right now from Mount Vernon, Virginia. Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Sure.
I had a couple of questions. I'm a retired school teacher, for one thing. But I know that in many European countries, not only is preschool child care universal, but it's paid for by the government.
Right.
And I'm wondering if there have been comparisons made in these studies to see whether they are having the same types of problems.
Producing lots of aggressive Swedes,
right,
and domineering Danes.
And I guess part of that might be a factor would be if American families that have to work and are therefore having to put their children in child care are also having to pay rather exorbitant fees for it, might part of the aggression be coming from disgruntled parents who are at home with their kids in the evening trying to figure out these bills, as opposed to people who are sitting there saying, hey, you know, this is paid for.
It's covered. We're cool. Susan, we'll look at that. But may I ask you, how long ago did you retire from school teaching?
Just a few years ago. But I was in education for 30 years.
And did you see a shift, a change as a result of increasing child care?
Yes, I did. And part of that, I have to say, honestly, was on the part of the parents.
Meaning what?
Because the mentality seemed to be, to me, that school became nothing more than extended child care, and the buses were there to pick them up instead of them having to bring the child to daycare. I would have to call a parent, for example, in the middle of the day because their child was acting out so badly, and they would say, don't bother me, I'm at work.
That's your job, teacher.
Right.
Wow.
So I feel like in some instances the parents are to blame for this because they are not taking their responsibility as parents. It's as if child care and school became in loco parentis, and they were just totally tossing the kids to the mercy of the school and the daycare.
So the whole thing becoming a kind of blanket of child care rather than that more interactive education process. Susan, it's a great question about Europe. Let us turn to it. Bruce Fuller, what do we know on that front? Susan points out lots of child care, daycare in Europe. Are the results there comparable to what you found here? Do you know?
Well, a couple points, Tom. One is there's actually sort of a mild joke in academic circles about studying child care in Scandinavia because the quality is so high you can't even detect effects of quality because it's uniformly high in places like Denmark and Sweden. These are countries that have invested heavily in high-quality preschool programs.
Have they done comparable research? Have they developed, in spite of that, do they still have a more, let's say, aggressive children, or is the lesson that if the quality is high enough, that's not necessarily an outcome?
Well, I'm most familiar with the work in Denmark, and there the programs are really focused on social development. It's really a place where parents and teachers come together to be with young kids, to get them ready and socialized with each other, to get them ready to be young members of Danish society. Mm-hmm. There's much less of this obsession on pumping up brains and getting kids to memorize the alphabet. At least in Northern Europe.
Yeah.
The other major point is that these countries have invested heavily in family leave policies. Mm-hmm. So in terms of reaching a better balance between work and child rearing, much of Northern Europe is way ahead of the United States in that regard.
So at some level, you get what you pay for or what you yearn for. We are Americans. Patricia's calling from Somerville, Massachusetts. Hi, Patricia. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Well, what do you know?
Well, I work for an early Head Start in Somerville. We're a home base, not center base. But I have to say that I really agree with Bruce Fuller that this is a red flag. I think some of it's a policy issue, but there is such a push on academics. And being at an early Head Start, the original goal of Head Start was to support the social competency of children in their everyday life and in the future. But I find that the federal government is really pushing academics, and in Head Start now, there's child outcomes that have to be shown.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the shift really needs to go to that social-emotional development. The focus hasn't been there, and I think parents are also getting the message from, you know, toys, of the alphabet, and academics, and we are forgetting the importance of valuing in social-emotional development. And I don't want, and the caller before last really was blaming parents, and I really don't want to blame the parents. I really think it's more that it's the policy, and it's a bigger issue.
But you're saying don't leave the heart out of it. But let me ask you, Patricia, Head Start serves exactly those lower income American kids who these studies find benefit enormously academically from that experience. So that's surely a value to them.
Oh, certainly it is a value. And I'm not saying we shouldn't look at academics, but I just don't want to forget about this.
Absolutely. We've got it. Patricia, and thank you for your work there. Catherine Boothlaforce, can you see American child care centers being somehow encouraged by policy or by studies like this to put more emphasis on social development? Could these outcomes change if the kind of, I don't know, Scandinavian-style emphasis on the heart as well as the head were more central to child care mission?
Well, I would hope so. But the reality of it is that if you look at child care in this country and the average wage and the amount of turnover among child care providers, it's really terrible compared with other countries. And so I think that if we can address that problem, that might help some greater and better training, better education for child care providers. And I think more of an emphasis on social emotional development can be part of that training and education. One thing that I'd like to say is that I think that we cannot divorce all of this from the context of the family. That child care, daycare occurs in the context of what's going on in the family environment. And parents are really stressed. If both parents are working, and as Bruce was saying, we need to look at the policies of employers and so on to make this better for families. And now we add, you know, the guilt of child care and what's happening
it's
in
too
child
much.
Care. And I think that, you know, we need to give parents more support. We need to educate parents more as well about, you know, if your child is in lots of care, what are the things that you can do when you're at home?
Can you lay out some of them? I'm sure many ears will be perked up and listening here.
It's tempting, you know, both parents are working full time. You get your kids home. It's like, feed them and put them to bed. It's tempting to not try and sort of make up for that time with good quality interaction. And even if you have 15 or 20 minutes of one-on-one time when you can spend that time with your infant and young child, it's really important. And what we found when we looked at our families when the children were 7 months old is we actually compared families where the mother was working more than 30 hours a week versus families where the mother was staying at home with the child.
Yes.
And we found that there was only 12 hours difference on average per week in the amount of time that they were spending with their children. And I think that that's good news.
Right.
Because mothers were finding the time somewhere on the weekend to sort of make up for that. And so I think that we need to support parents in what they're doing and help them to spend more time giving their children the attention and not just cognitive stimulation, but the love and attention and affection and the cognitive stimulation as well.
Don't give up on that. Make the investment, and there may be a buffering effect here. Natalie's calling from Lancaster, Massachusetts. Hi, Natalie. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I am a homeschooling parent, and my kids used to be in preschool, or our oldest had gone to preschool. We've had mm-hmm. them in public and private school.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing I've learned along the way is that the adult-to-child ratio seems to be a huge factor in behavior. And now that we're homeschooling, I see it with the other homeschooled kids. And I'm wondering if the if your panel mm-hmm. had surveyed that question in doing their own research.
Because, the simple issue of the number of adults on hand to deal with the kids.
Right, because when I know of my experience sending my oldest to preschool, there were two preschool teachers in a classroom of possibly 15 or 18 kids at a time.
Oh, wow.
And that's a whole different dynamic than one parent, three kids, one parent, even five kids.
Natalie, I will ask about that, but let me ask you something. You're homeschooling your children, you said now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Why are you doing that?
Well, actually, it does tap into these issues of behavior problems, not only because we found that our kids were suffering some behavior problems, depression specifically, but it was largely because the dynamics in the school environment mm-hmm. were very aggressive and just very difficult to deal with.
May I ask you something? Do you have any concern? I understand your decision. Do you have any concern that later in life your homeschooled children are going to be set loose into a world of more aggressive kids from childcare and public school, and in our economy have trouble with that? Or that's just not the way you want to think about it?
Well, actually, the interesting thing I've learned is that I expected a lot of negative feedback from strangers, from, you know, just people in general learning that we had pulled our kids out of public school
yeah.
environment. And instead, what we got is that I have comments from business owners who say they prefer to hire homeschooled kids, that they find them to be better socialized, more responsive.
Oh, well, that's great. I hope they give all their female or male employees plenty of parental leave to stay home and do that homeschooling.
Right, I know. It's a bit, I mean, it is a catch-22. It's really difficult, and homeschooling is not the answer for everybody, as is public school is not the answer for everybody. No one shoe fits all, and it is a very difficult environment because overall it doesn't feel particularly supportive of parents' needs. But I still come back to this issue of
the ratio question.
Ratio. Does more time spent
yeah,
with children impact their behavior?
We've got it. Let us pick it up, and thank you for your call, Natalie. Bruce Fuller, what about it? In child care settings, can this be addressed simply by, you know, cranking up the number of adults on hand?
Well, we do know, Tom, that this ratio is a crucial factor, and it goes back to how do we create warmer, more responsive settings for young kids. We know that preschool teachers who get down on the floor and talk to the kids, reason with the kids, help kids work through their social problems and equip them with their own skills and agility to work through conflicts with other kids. These sorts of human-scale relationships are just as important in preschool as they are at home. So the more we can get adults and lower that ratio, the more adults we have per kids, the greater likelihood we have these richer interactions on preschool floors.
But, of course, as we've heard, that's going to be reflected in the bill that comes at the end of the month for that child care, and families sometimes already struggling with the cost of it. Let's take another call. Laura's calling from Gloucester, Massachusetts. Hi, Laura. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
Earlier you were talking about the interesting thing about highly affluent children or families and their children not being terribly social. Some of them, I'm sure, are, but some not.
Yeah, we were looking at the outcome found here in Bruce's study, 15% more behavior problems among affluent kids who were in child care.
Yes, and I've seen, my son is 5 and he goes to a private school. He went to a preschool that did not have computers or anything like that. It was much more of a social setting.
Yeah.
And he now has lots of friends who do have computers and video games and stuff, and they don't play as well together. They don't play against each other in a way like a board game, like checkers, but against a TV screen. And I'm just seeing more and more when kids are more plugged in at an early age, they may have the money to be plugged in.
Right.
but they're plugged in and they're unable to be, or they have more trouble being social. They may test well with, you know, fine motor skills, but when it comes to just hanging out with their friends, it's very interesting.
And you suspect there may be a connection to affluence there with the number of plug-ins available to them. Let us pick it up. Catherine Booth LaForce, what about it?
Well, we don't have any data on that yet in our study, but I think it's a very interesting question, and we will be looking at that. We do have information in our study that we just haven't analyzed yet about video game usage and the amount of time spent watching TV and the amount of time on the Internet as these children have become older, and we can see what the effects are, but we don't have an answer about that right now, and it's a very interesting point.
One that anybody would want to look at. Ellen's calling from Washington, D.C. Hi, Ellen. You're on the air.
Thank you. I have a comment and a question. My
yes.
quick comment is I studied child development, have a degree in clinical psychology about 30 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and 30 years ago we were having the same arguments and discussing the same issues.
Yeah.
And in reading all the studies and listening to all the discussion over the last 30 years, I guess I've come to the rather simplistic conclusion that good child care is good and bad child care is bad, and good home care is good and bad home care is bad. I have known in my life many women who have stayed home with their children, infants, toddlers, older children, homeschooling, and some of them are really bad at it. Even though it's the mother home with the child,
right.
they get very frustrated. It is very difficult to be a 24-hour-a-day parent.
Yep.
Some of them love infants. Some of them hate infants. They can't stand the dependency.
So there's no guarantee that the home care will be better.
Exactly. And I think the real issue, which we have you've mentioned
mm-hmm.
many times, but should be the subject of a much longer discussion,
mm-hmm.
is if you want good child care, you have to pay for good child care.
Ellen, our time is very short, but we appreciate your call, and thank you for it. Bruce Fuller, what about it? Your numbers show, I mean, Ellen's clearly right. Not everybody's going to be great at doing the best at home. Sometimes child care will be better, but your numbers say overall that's not what you're seeing. What should we take away from this as a country?
Well, I think we are making progress. I would disagree with Ellen a little bit on this. The issue is no longer should we have child care and preschool programs in America, but how we engineer higher quality programs and attend to the social development area. Nationwide, we spend over $21 billion a year in child care and preschool programs just for families who can't afford to pay. So I think we are making progress. I think the spirit of both these studies is not whether it's good or bad, but how do we make it better?
Catherine Booth LaForce, do you see movement afoot to make it better or not?
Well, I hope so. Trying to be optimistic about it, I'm hoping that the results of these studies will be a wake-up call to policymakers. And the advantage of these two particular studies is that they are large numbers of children. Other studies have been on smaller numbers. And so I think the fact that these are large numbers of children and families and the results are somewhat consistent is really a wake-up call, and I'm hoping that people pay attention to this.
Well, we're grateful to the work that each of you has done here. There is a real wake-up call, a red flag, as one of our callers said. Let's hope we see a good response to it. Catherine Booth LaForce at the University of Washington, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Thank you, Tom.
And Bruce Fuller in Berkeley, California at UC Berkeley. Bruce, thank you so much for joining us.
Many thanks.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.